Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
Welcome, everybody, once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. My name is Adam Homey. I am your host, and I am honored once again by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. We are coming to you from my elaborate studio, which consists of my laptop and my headset, and our high-tech studio out here in the nature of my sumptuous balcony here in Las Vegas, Nevada, the hottest city in the world. And when we explore with you on these episodes, we take you to those places where my laptop lifestyle drives us, and you discover some of those most important mastermind moments that give you those aha moments, those slight edges, those unexpected inspirations that move you closer to your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and give you more that enables you to be of service to your community, market, and audience and make the world a better place by being in it. And if that sounds like a grand plan, wait till you see what we have in store for you today. As an entrepreneur, as entrepreneurs in general, fitness is an issue. I'm talking physical fitness. I'm talking mental fitness. And I'm speaking of everything that fuels us to keep going. My own biggest issue is I'm sometimes too sedentary. And just the simple moves I've made recently of little things to increase my physical activity, the fact that they've had such a huge impact on my physical composition and my mental acuity demonstrate how powerful this stuff is. And it's stuff I already knew and just had to put back into practice. We have with us today somebody who's going to share with us on some of this stuff, the mental fitness, the physical fitness. And we're going to get to explore a bit about his own journey in the personal training industry. His name is Pete Piranio. I wanted to have him here on the show for a while. I'm so happy that our schedules finally coincided so we can make it happen. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Pete is an entrepreneur who built a multi-million dollar personal training business, complete with 5 locations and 12 franchise partners. He's helped a franchise to grow from 10 to 400 locations, and he works with professional athletes who are launching their own brands and franchises. Currently, Pete finds himself on a mission to assist other fitness business owners and entrepreneurs in general to start, grow, and scale successful businesses. Pete helps fitness entrepreneurs grow their empire with the Fitness Business Operating System, an operating system designed specifically to assist fitness business owners. Now, pause. If you're tuning in and you yourself are not necessarily in the fitness business, that's actually all the more reason to be here. We often make our most profound discoveries when we look the places that other places aren't looking, when we discover learnings from other industries that our competition is not even paying attention to. I like to tell the story that when I first acquired my skills to design websites when I was a nascent entrepreneur and had to do them all for myself. And there was no WordPress. There were no content management systems. There were no themes. It was all about coding in HTML. This was even before mobile. This is before Internet Explorer 6. I think Alta Vista was still a search engine when I got started with this stuff. And I like to tell people that I discovered my initial learnings, not only in the technical coding of web design, but also in the aesthetic applications of the visual design that attracts people from all those porn sites I used to look at when I was about 23 years old. I was looking somewhere where others weren't. I was looking at an industry that is based on visual attraction, and I was also looking at an industry that was based on simplicity. So looking at the source code, I learned what H1, H2, H3, and divs and all that other stuff was all about. Thank God for WordPress. We don't have to deal with that crap anymore. We can just set up a theme and use widgets. That's awesome. But I wanted to make the point just very quickly before I introduce Pete to reinforce why it's so important to look at niches, because the riches are there, not only in terms of serving them, but learning from them. All right, enough about me. Let's learn more about me. And let's bring on Pete Piranio. Come on in, the weather's fine.
Hey, Adam, I appreciate you. What an intro there. I appreciate you having me.
As you can tell, we're a little what some people call offbeat and what some people call innovative. So let's see what happens here. Before we dive in.
I like the innovative part of that, but I couldn't agree with you more though on looking outside the industry. I mean, just real quick, I will say that was probably the number one thing that allowed me to have the success that I had in my old business before, because I looked outside the fitness industry because I felt like the industry was a mess. And that's where I really learned about business and systems. I look to your G's of the world and all of that stuff. And so I think that's a critical thing. I think you get more aha moments, as you mentioned, when you actually look outside. So I think that was a great point you made.
Okay. So what we want to do here, and you're absolutely right, is before we dive in, and I know you have a lot of things you want to share with us today. We had a nice little green room chat there where you gave me some teasers and I really loved them. Tell us a bit beyond your bio, which is so impressive, by the way. I'm not sure if I'm worthy to be here, and it's my show. Tell us a bit about something that inspired or whatever's driven you to bring you to where you are today, from in your own words, starting from your intersection of your passion.
Yeah, I think to me, the vehicle of entrepreneurship allows you to have an impact in your community, your country, lifting people up that are struggling. And so to me, it's having, as we say now, transforming lives by transforming fitness entrepreneurship. So I think that purpose has really always driven me to use this vehicle. I consider it a gift from a man above to be, to be able to really be inspired and I've always loved entrepreneurship. And so to me, that's what just really drives me, is to be able to build things, to give opportunities, growth opportunities for other and try to have an impact.
Okay. So for our listeners, and I love that, by the way, for our listeners, this may feel like it jumps around a little bit, but as I mentioned in the intro, we're going to cover a few different areas. So just put on your seatbelt and hang out with us and know that by relaxing yourself, hearing our voices, picturing yourself being at the table with us, sitting in on a private mastermind conversation, your aha moment is here. We just don't know exactly which aha moment it's going to be. So Pete gave me several different areas he wants to cover, and we're going to move kind of fast because there's a lot of things we want to get done in the next 45 minutes or so. And some of this stuff is going to be about the fitness industry, and some of it's going to be about you as an entrepreneur. So let's start with something that everybody that I know struggles with, no matter how leveraged they claim to be. You always hear you should work on the business, not in it. But how do you systematically remove yourself from daily operations? I can imagine how this could have been a challenge for you, because I've worked with personal trainers, and there's a big jump from actually being up there on the gym floor helping them do their exercises to being at the head of a business empire.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first aha. I remember when I started, I opened my first studio when I was 27 in 2001, and I was your classic technician, personal trainer in the trenches, training clients, all day. And luckily I've, had some early growth in terms of, I didn't have too much of an issue attracting clients and that sort of thing. And so my real bottleneck though was, man, I felt like I had my other trainers, my team, I felt like turnover every 6 to 12 months. I mean, it was just nonstop. So that was always besides training clients, dealing with hiring, recruiting, and training new trainers, and constantly doing that and pouring your knowledge into them as fast as you can so they could do a good job with your clients. And it was just, I was really approaching that stage of burnout. I mean, it was my, I was working 5 a.m., 9 p.m. a night every weekend for a couple of years. And I just, you know, finally was like, hey, this is not sustainable, you know, for the long haul to keep this up. And if I don't fix these people problems, then it's definitely not sustainable, especially in a business that the people are the product, right?
Yes.
So that's really when a mentor of mine actually recommended the book, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Like you said, the whole, you know, he's the one that really coined that phrase, work on, not in. And I just hit my aha moment came from that, where it was, you know, he talked about building your franchise prototype and whether you want a franchise or not. And so thinking about the business as kind of a machine, if you will, of integrated systems. And, you know, the other thing that really had the biggest aha moment for me was to build a business that's systems dependent, not people dependent. And when I heard that, I was like, whoa. And so then I just really started that process of duplicating myself, right? So it was everything from how do I design programs for clients? How do I, you know, train the actual sessions? And so getting into everything that an actual personal trainer did, which, you know, to say that you could systematize personal training is almost sacrilegious in the field, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? You can still systematize and personalize though, right? So you got your frameworks and everything. And so I literally thought about everything that I did that allowed me to have success to that point and documented it. And, you know, then was able to, you know, bring in trainers that I was able to train them on that system. And the key about that was, you know, once I created a system for what I did, and then I was going to plug somebody into it, was it allowed me then to actually hire fairly inexperienced trainers, right? Because I could plug them into the system and take an inexperienced trainer and make them better than most experienced trainers. And so that was really, you know, the process. So I think for people, you know, kind of in that, you gotta stop and think about the things you're doing. You have to systematically think about, like, how am I going to duplicate myself? Like, what are those things that I need to, you know, take off of my plate, and what am I best at doing? And I have to focus, you know, I'm focused, my energies there. So if I'm best at sales and marketing, then, you know, and you're doing a bunch of other stuff, then guess what? You know, you need to start to look at those systems, creating those systems. And then, you know, nowadays too, you can, the ability to outsource virtual talent and all that, it's easier than ever. But yeah, I mean, I could kind of go on and on there, but that was really the start. I mean, then that's kind of, you know, the whole, cause you're right. I mean, the saying work on, not in gets used very, very loosely, but you really have to think about that franchise prototype again, whether you want a franchise or not. I mean, that's what Ray Kroc did, the original guy that really created the franchise revolution with McDonald's, is, you know, doing that. And it can happen in any industry.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a story of my own here, but in order to be able to tell it properly, the first thing I want to do is I want to go through two other points here. First of all, in your experience, what are some of the mental blocks that keep business owners stuck in the trenches? I could go on about this for a day, but I just want to hear what you have to say.
Well, number one, they make themselves a part of the business as opposed to apart from the business, right? So their identity is, so, you know, again, in the personal training world, particularly the clients we work with, I mean, they are the trainer, right? So it's very hard for them to imagine, like, clients being happy without them training them. And I can remember going through that head trash too, like, oh my gosh, they're going to just be so upset. And, you know, when I did it, they weren't at all, really. I mean, and again, as long as you provide them a good product, but I think that's the biggest one, is identity is what they're doing. And that really keeps them, you know, locked into the technical aspects of thing. I would say number two is, again, not having that vision of the business being the product itself, right? So as opposed to, you know, so the personal training studio, again, to use my industry's example, that entire package, that entire box, everything in it is the product, all aspects of it, not the actual service itself, just itself, which is what most of us deliver, right? So if I'm a plumber, I'm a dentist, I'm a whatever, that, you know, their identity is tied into that, but they're not looking at the entire business as the product. They're only looking at the technical thing they do. So you have to kind of extract yourself. Those are, to me, are two of the biggest. You're right. We could go on and on about this, but I would say those are the two that come to mind first.
And then the other thing I want to bring up is, you know, you mentioned the E myth. So let's speak about myths for a little bit longer here. What are some of the myths that surround systematizing your business and building a self-managed business? And by self-managed, I just want to make sure I understand our terms correctly. A business that could run itself if Pete Piranio decided to run off to Guatemala for 6 months without his cell phone.
That's exactly it. Sometimes people, they think their business is working without them. But as I say, if you can't step away for a month and it's still paying you, then it's definitely not the case. So, one of the biggest is often, you know, that we hear is, you know, the employees, my employees won't follow the systems, right? So that's like one of the biggest right there. Is they think that, okay, I could get these systems, but they're not going to follow them. And it's actually the furthest thing from the truth, because the reality is in my experience, most people have, frankly, a lot of employee turnover and issues because they're not providing enough management and leadership structure. They're not creating enough expectations and standards. You know, they abdicate, right? So they hire somebody and hope that, okay, now they hired somebody, cool, I can finally get rid of that stuff, right? and most of the time, you know, the employee is not happy with that idea, right? So it's like, hey, I need to at least know what your expectations and standards are. And that's really, systems are really, to me, it's kind of the perfect form of delegation. It makes delegation easy. So people that struggle with delegation, for instance, having a system is just, you're in advance putting down, you know, whether it's document today software, that's what we use with our clients, is it's plug and play software that has the system in it. You know, it's really delegating those things in advance. So that, I think that's a huge, you know, myth in itself is probably number one, is the employee side of things. The other thing is it's too hard, right? So a lot of times, oh man, it's just too hard. I don't have time to put, you know, systems in the place. That's just not the reality either, because you know, you can often, first of all, recruit your employees to be a part of that if you have current employees, right? So just having, if you have a system strategy and set literally goals around what percentage we're going to systematize this month, this quarter, get your employees involved in that, especially you know, if some of them are delivering on this and you don't know what the heck they're doing. So there's multiple strategies that make it time efficient. So it's not that it's too hard to do. In addition to looking at best practices and sometimes, you know, making those investments, like that's one of the things that, you know, we provide best for our clients is you're getting done for you plug and play systems, right? So there's, you look hard enough in your industry, they're out there and then you can customize them. So that can accelerate your process. So I think those are really two of the biggest for sure, is the employee side of things. And it's just simply, they think it's too hard.
Okay. As you were saying all that stuff over the past few minutes, I took several little notes here that come back to what I wanted to contribute. First of all, I'm reminded of, I think this is about maybe 15 years ago or so, back when I lived in Pittsburgh, my accountant moved, like he went and bought a new house. And I went over one day to help him unpack some of his stuff. At the same time I was there, he had somebody who had come in, he had hired to come in and clean the whole place one time. And so I got into a conversation with the guy he'd hired to clean the place. And the guy had a van out in front that had the name of his company on it. And he was, I figured out very quickly, chief cook and bottle watcher. Now, me being a relatively new entrepreneur at the time, I was in hotshot mode trying to explain to him leverage and teams and everything else. And he said, I don't want any of that. I just want to do it myself. And I realized, okay, I'm not going to help to convert this guy at all. And I realized looking back now with all the additional experience that there was no need for me to, for two reasons. Number one, it's just something he had to discover on his own. And number two, what if he just didn't want to get that big? You know, not everybody is designed to sit on top of an empire. And I guess there are some people that just really want to do it for the sake of doing it. And if they understand that without themselves, there's no business. Maybe they're Maybe they already have all the money they feel they need, and they just want to keep busy, and they don't want to deal with a lot of organizational logistical hassles. They just want to get gigs and go out and do them. Well, for some people, that's fine. But for other people, they may be able to want to take off for Guatemala for 6 months without their cell phone. It just all depends. I have a colleague in business who I've known for a long time, and she told me a story about joining a mastermind group. And her reason for joining the mastermind group is she's a coach, a business coach, and she wanted to do some things to optimize her business. So she barely got through the question that she shared on the first meeting of the group, and they immediately pounced on her saying, oh, well, what you got to do is you have to add a zero to your current rate. You yourself only work with two clients, and you hire a bunch of other coaches to work with everybody else. And that completely alienated her.
Yeah.
What she really wanted to do was raise her rates for her individual coaching. That's what she wanted. She wasn't interested in building a bunch of mini-me's, and she wasn't looking to appeal to a market where you'd be assigned one of their 25 trained coaches. And besides, she already had multiple streams of income. She had leverage businesses that didn't require her presence in them. She was there specifically to optimize the coaching business and to get some insights from being in the mastermind that could make her a better coach. So it's a matter of sometimes we have these formulated answers that we give without looking at the individual situation. I bring that up because I heard, Pete, your own discoveries and how it was a very unique journey for you. Now, here's the third thing. I used to own a web development firm that I shut down in the year 2011. I bring that up on a lot of episodes because I learned so much by jumping in the trenches without knowing a damn thing and doing something because it was something I could easily make money doing without even knowing if that was going to be my brilliance and passion or not, and it wasn't. So I did the whole build a team thing. I brought in project managers, designers, VAs, all this other stuff. And when I got to the point where the firm had 60 clients, I couldn't handle 60 clients. So I assigned all the clients, project manager, and then we had all the other people. Well, I had to deal with these situations where clients insisted on working only with me to the point where they would take emails that their project manager had sent them, forward them to me, and attempt to have the conversation with me. And those clients ultimately ended up firing themselves, and that's a different story. I'm not going to take up on it. So now let's go to point number four. Is my podcast reach system, which is a process we have where it's mostly done for you with some done with you components, where we help small businesses and entrepreneurs launch their podcasts as their networking, client attraction, and celebrity expert branding tool. I started this venture when the bug first hit a couple years ago, when in-person stages disappeared, and all of a sudden everybody wanted a podcast. There was a big market there. I've launched podcasts before. I did some with some of my consulting clients, and there was this one example of one we had launched the year before. It's the Write Your Book in a Flash with Top Business Leaders podcast with Dan Janelle, and that was a picture-perfect launch and a perfect design for a podcast. It has made Dan, how do I put this gently, a fucking shit ton of money. And what's really cool, what's really great about it is I still had my notes, I still had all the emails, and I still had all the innovations that I had discovered while leading that particular launch. So I went back, I wrote that all down, I broke it into a step-by-step process, I labeled it the podcast reach system, and I put out there that I was looking to help three entrepreneurs launch their podcast. I was doing a pilot program. I got my three, got them all launched, and I'm going somewhere with this. I'm not just grazing. This goes back to what we were talking about. I actually learned so much more about leverage by doing it that way. My model for the podcast reach system is actually I think it's called the Badass Brand Formula. It was created by Pia Silva, who was one of our other guests a couple years ago. And the idea behind it is you essentially create a program that has a high price point. And it's something that you can do yourself without a large team supporting you, and you systematize it as much as possible. So you have step-by-steps, you have templates, you have swipe files, you have guidebooks and things along those lines, so that even though you have some hands-on with it, you have it in such a way where it is simply tweaking it to the bespoke needs of each individual client, but the process is the same. So what I discovered in terms of building outsource around that is, no, I don't want to send this to people who I pay $4 an hour and then have to correct their work every single time and have them just, you know, just try and follow steps on a bullet point sheet. What I've done with Podcast Reach is I've given the program to three people who wanted to launch podcasts who were of the virtual assistant type because they wanted to launch their own. And I gave it to them on two understandings. Number one, they would master it. Actually, three understandings. Number one, they would master it for themselves. Number two, that when they had other clients who wanted to launch podcasts, they would refer them to me. So I was creating my own referral networks with this. And the third piece is that the Podcast Reach system is something that if I have a lot of time or I want to, or I just am in a situation financially where I need to keep the money, it's something I can do myself without too much effort. However, if I want to scale it and get a ton of reachers, I have people around me who can jump in at any time and get paid pretty well to help me with pieces of it where I still have a nice profit margin. And it's all work that is systematized and does not require an extremely high level of skill. The end value to the client is that it gets done for them. So what you said about the plug and play thing sounds sort of like that. And finally, part of Podcast Reach is part of it is once the podcast is set up, we're not an editing and distribution agency. We focus on the launch piece of it, but I do have people that I can refer out when our clients need their episodes edited and published. And we also, within Podcast Reach, coach them to design it in such a way where they need basically no editing whatsoever. That's a whole different conversation. This is the type of thing where you can teach your teenage kid how to do it, and it makes a nice part-time job for them. So we give each client a tutorial where we actually film me publishing one of the episodes. And I give them the Camtasia file that's them watching over my shoulder with all the worksheets and everything that comes with it, which I already have templates of. I just customize them for each client. And then part of what I say is, this is how I do it. These are the softwares I use. As you go through this yourself, you may discover innovations that make it even easier for you to do it. You may use different softwares. You may use slightly different processes. What matters is that the end product looks the same. So that, to me, has been very interesting because I've actually had some of the other companies that I've referred this work out to, and in one case, the person's teenage son, come back to me with their questions as they mastered it, and also their own aha moments about little discoveries they made of, oh, well, you taught me how to do it this way, but I figured out how to do it this other way, and it actually works very well for me. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, okay, actually, I agree with you. I think that's a better way to do it. And I retroactively incorporated into my own process. So the reason I bring that all up, Pete, before we start getting into the health aspect of our conversation, is I wanted to just delve a little bit deeper into the discoveries and the challenges you had as you pulled yourself out of the business and designed everything you just said. Did any of these types of things happen for you? And in what ways did this actually accentuate and accelerate your process?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everything is in stages. So, I mean, one of the things that we have in our program is we call it the Empirepreneur Ladder. And so, you know, each entrepreneur goes through their own personal growth stages too, from a self, you know, self-employed to the manager, to the business owner, to what we call an investor, and then the empirepreneur, which is the, for the namesake of our company. And there's different attributes at each one of those levels. But my point is like when I first, simply started to duplicate myself, extract myself, every stage has, new challenges. And, for me, then it was like, okay, great. I've replaced myself on the training side, but, leadership management, managing people, a whole different story. If that's, like you said, if that's the route you're going to go. And then, so I got to be great at, as I like to say, winning the people game. That was, one of the biggest things is being able to do that. So an entirely different skill set. So, and to me, that's actually for folks that, are looking to, and especially in our industry, again, because they are managing people with trainers and scaling. So just, again, depends on, like you said, depending on what you're trying to do from a business standpoint. That's actually the biggest one. Everybody drives marketing, but without winning the people game, they're dead in the water. And so, so that was, that took seemed like years of challenges to meet that. But then when I started to get into multiple locations, now it was different. It was just multi-unit management's an entire different thing in leadership, and then leading leaders, right? So now you're developing and leading leaders, not just developing the technical person, right? So if I'm whatever your technical expertise, often that's easier to teach and train because you maybe did it for years, you're a master at it, right? But then later on, when you're developing leaders that are leading those folks, entirely different skill sets. So there's just many, many aha moments, I think, as you continue to grow your business. And that's why we have our Empirepreneur Ladder, because we want our clients to intentionally think about those different stages, because it would have helped me tremendously if somebody said to me, hey, Pete, right now you're in the self-employed kind of stage. This is, really probably the way that you're thinking about things to take that next step. Here's the attributes you're going to need to have. Whoa, that would open my eyes. And then, I can see why you're stuck here. Here's the attributes you're going to need to move to being a true business owner. And then there's just several aha moments along that way. So that's really an essential. We create that path for our clients to be able to see those things. Cause when you can see it, now it's a lot easier to go pursue it.
Absolutely. So I do want to spend a few moments, since you are a personal trainer and you have perspectives on fitness, as I mentioned at the beginning, what have you discovered when it comes to working with entrepreneurs for whom fitness is a real challenge? And for a lot of us, the idea of working fitness into our routine is very difficult. I'm vegan, for instance. So when I tell people that, they expect me when I show up that I will essentially look like a pretzel stick, physically speaking. And I can tell you that's the exact opposite of how I look. My big issue is I've been sedentary for too long. And although I've made changes to that, it's something that a lot of entrepreneurs deal with. They, even if they have the time, the efforts and the commitment that comes with being an entrepreneur gets you to the point where you may just ain't got nothing left. So what can entrepreneurs do to start turning that around? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs who could spend a few more hours on the treadmill, to use that colloquial expression.
Sure. Well, for me, it was because, again, I'm in a sense, long retired from in the trenches from a training standpoint. But of course, it's in my blood and I did it forever. But I went through those different stages where, because I was a college athlete. So, I've worked out my whole life. It was just part of it. Right. But then, once I was, started building my businesses and like you talked about all the challenges that kind of go with that, it was harder for me. I didn't really have a meaning, I always worked out for a goal. Right. So I was an athlete. So there's a point to it. And so I did find it, even somebody that had been doing it their whole life was in the industry, to be motivated to do it without having an attached goal or purpose, at least attached to it. And so my recommendation, people, and this is what really revitalized me, got me back on track, keeps me on track today, is that you got to do it to optimize your output. If you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you need to be on your A game. right? You got to be mentally sharp. You got to have the energy to be able to execute, put in the time when you need to put in the time, all of that. And so to me, it's part of the must. And so I really don't even look at it. It's like some people work out from a more vanity and standpoint or whatever else. To me, it's being able to optimize myself so I can be at the top of my game when it comes to running my businesses. And in most entrepreneurs, that is their main purpose vision, right? That's what really gets them up every morning and gets them excited to get after it. And so I think when you can see that as part of your entrepreneurial journey, part of your business, a necessity for it, right? We make all these other things priorities all the time, right? That, oh, like I gotta do it because I gotta grow my business. Well, I would say you gotta do it. You gotta work out to grow your business. So if you can have that mental shift, it can help you tremendously. And that goes on multiple fronts, from the nutrition side to the water, to make sure, if you're supplementing. I mean, all of those different components. I focus on those things because it's all about optimizing my output. And I'm 47, so the older, I've gotten, that just has become more and more critical. Otherwise, you just don't have the same, spark when I was 27.
Yeah, you and I are about the same age, so some of our experiences may be similar. And I've thought about things sort of like what you just said. And I love how you create the mental shift that being physically fit is actually a component of being entrepreneurially fit. I'm changing the words a little bit, but the idea is the same. So in order to be successful in business, you become successful in fitness, you become successful in taking care of yourself. And I'm wondering if there's something about our education system that discourages this. Let me develop this a little bit further, because you're not the first person to inspire these thoughts in me. I remember when I was in school and gym class felt like a combination of a punishment and a requirement. I remember being yelled at and made fun of by my alleged gym teachers because I couldn't do as many push-ups as they wanted me to do. Or they would make me hold myself in uncomfortable positions like they were trying to teach me some lesson. And the message that they were giving is, do this or you'll face disciplinary action, as in get in trouble for it. Okay. And I thought about this some more. And then I also remembered the times where I sat in gym class. And what I mean by sat in gym class, I mean sat in gym class. They had gone through all their checklists of the state mandated required things, and they just didn't feel like doing anything. So they said, oh, go jog if you want, or sit on the bleachers, or do whatever you want. Okay. The common thread through all of these things, and maybe it happened, but I missed it, but I'm pretty sure it didn't happen, is I don't recall anybody ever giving me a message like the one you've given our listeners, where doing this is actually an investment in being successful in whatever you have to do. I'm now being reminded of a gym class I was in where we actually didn't get to exercise because the gym teacher spent the entire period yelling, and I mean yelling, about how we were lazy, how we were going to, how we were disappointing, and how we'd better get with it because there's going to be a gym class in college. And if you think this is something, you just wait, you'll fail college. Actually, my experience in college was nothing like that, but okay. But I don't remember anything from that day that made me feel that taking this seriously was an investment in academic success. I was more interested in academics than athletics. I'm not an athlete. I never was. But I don't remember somebody coming to me saying that investing in athletics would make me more successful and more optimized in academics. I also remember being told, oh, you read too much. You got to try out for sports. Okay, that didn't inspire me because I never tried out for anything. But what if somebody had said, if you if you know, maybe you weren't designed to be a football player. Maybe you don't have the agility and the precision to be a basketball player. But did you know that if you maybe joined the track team or something, that that would create energy for you physically that would make your brain work better, that would get you better grades and get you into a better college? What if somebody had told me that? What if they were telling our kids that today?
100%. And I can agree with you more. I mean, I think that's why so many people really, really struggle on that front. And I think the other thing too, that does help you. I mean, for me, what really helped me too, is I mean, when I was a sophomore in college, I had my fat stage and I was a college athlete, and it was something that, you know, I still was at that stage. And in fact, it was to the point where if I didn't fix it, like,
well, you were a sophomore, you still had your freshman 15.
Yeah. And then,
I mean,
some.
Come on.
and then some. And, yeah. And so it was, but it was, you know, it was, I had to have enough of a wake up to, like, man, you know, basically coach saying, you're not going to play, or you're never going to, you know, you might not even be on this team if you don't fix that. Right. But, and then, you know, frankly, and later too, in later stages, as I got, you know, my old business got bigger and bigger, more complexity, all that stuff, gained some weight. And so I'm bringing it up because sometimes I think some people, if they haven't had the experience to kind of go from unhealthy, overweight to healthy and feel the difference, it's really hard to, it's really hard to explain. So that's a big factor for me too, is knowing the energy difference. I can remember, you know, particularly in college, the inability to get up early and all that kind of stuff. But once I dropped that, it's like 30, 40 pounds. It was just like, you know, and then again, later in my life, same thing. Like, it was like, once I got back to great, you know, great shape, great fitness again, it's like, okay, now I'm up at 5 and I love it. Right. And
yeah.
So I think that's something, if you have had that experience, it's, man, that keeps you on track. If you haven't, I mean, that's a difficult one where you almost have to have faith in somebody like me saying it. It's like, man, if you can just get to that other side and taste it and taste, I don't think people really realize how unhealthy they really are. I mean, again, because of the foods that we have out there, the process, uh-huh. I mean, all that, I mean, that just how toxic their bodies are. Uh-huh. I don't think they really, some people just don't really understand like how much better their energy and vitality and life could be if they committed to it long enough to kind of get to that other side. And that you don't need to be perfect. Like, there's, you know, but man, when they can experience that, then they'll never go back. I mean, you might have some cycles, but believe me, you'll want to get to the other side again eventually, because you've at least tasted that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And I do kind of want to get back to the other side, which is why I don't have the bandwidth right now to get into a full detailed, rigorous fitness program, but you know, I'm looking for things I can just incorporate into my routine. Like, I've actually worked into my workday that I physically relocate my work position a few times a day. And just the kinetic energy of doing so has a significant impact on my mental acuity and my ability to focus for longer periods of time and to achieve more output, simply mm-hmm. because I take a nice brisk walk around the complex. I go to the park. Since I have the laptop lifestyle, I have 3 or 4 different places that I work from, and I physically travel from one to the next. And I do this throughout the day. And people wonder, well, how do you put in those 12-hour days? Like, well, that's how I do it. I spend a couple hours here, a couple hours there, and the fact that I have to travel creates the breaks I need.
Yeah. And if you got to, again, use exercise, find a different meaning for it, right? Not that.
Yeah.
And shoot, often for me, same thing now, I use it as an energy boost too. So it's, you know, go work out at 2 instead of having that zero energy. Now, boom, I've picked up another couple hours that I'm going to do some things later on after, because my energy level skyrockets right after.
Well,
I'm moving.
Yeah. Yeah. So this goes back to, you just gave me an inspiration here, and I've said this many times. I believe that for many of a significant percentage of the workplace, particularly here in the United States today, we're still using an industrial revolution concept that does not apply. Now, if you're in a service industry, or you're in something like first responder, or if you're in manufacturing, agricultural labor, something like that, then shift work is necessary. You're going to have to be here from 7 to 3 or whatever it is. You're going to have to put in these hours because your availability needs to be there. But however, how many millions of people, and I think one of the silver linings of the bug is that with the whole work from home thing and the great resignation and everything else, there's been a lot of pushback on this finally. Millions of people in cubicle farms. Why? There are studies out there that show the people who work in cubicle farms, they're there for 8 hours, but the actual amount of time they spend on anything that benefits the company is 2 hours and 54 minutes. The rest of it is spent on pointless meetings, breaks, cubicle drop-bys, the need to go to the water cooler just because you have to physically move because you're getting atrophied mentally and physically by sitting there. And then there's also the whole, your actual work only takes you 3 hours. And if you go above and beyond, you'll probably be punished for it. Yeah, true story. And so you drain yourself with, I'm actually done for the day, but it's only 1:30. So going back to your point, and I know you have something here. Going back to your point, so all right, so I'm done for the day at 1:30. What if I hit the gym for an hour or two, came back at 3?
Yeah, well, listen, it goes back to kind of our original conversation. It's a lot of bad leadership management, lack of systems, right? Because I can tell you how I work with my teams, all my teams. You know, my folks are remote. And I tell them repeatedly, I could really, I don't count hours. I count outcomes. I count results. Like, we have goals. We have quarterly plans. We have, targets that we're hitting, And so if you have the right, again, system structure and the leadership and management, the soft side of it to drive it, then you don't have to have cubicles and feel like the only way you're going to get output from people if you lock them into a cubicle kind of thing. So it's just, to me, it's bad. It's a bad way of thinking about it because again, if you do have the right system structure in place, good leadership, like things that are gonna, create still accountability for people and people understand they still got to create the outcomes, right? Because if you don't have that in place, then you have nothing to measure against. And so that's really what it comes down to, is really inadequate leadership and management, so that it doesn't allow people enough of the freedom. Yeah, I could care less, like when somebody's doing what. There's certain availability where we got to get together on a meeting, but other than that, we're definitely outcome based for sure.
Right. Like, and another example is customer service. So if you work in customer service, it is necessary to have availability within a certain range, because if you're there to cover 8 hours of customer service availability or tech support availability within that range, when people call in, email in, chat in using the live chat or what have you, got to respond. But do you have to do that from a call center? So what if you were on call to do live chat customer support, and you decide that you just don't want to sit there? Or you're working from home and you want to go walk your dog or something. Well, they have these things, and I'm not sure if you've ever heard of this, Pete. They're called smartphones. And they have these things, and this is another one. And look this up if you haven't heard of it. They're called apps. Did you know that you can set up your tech support or your customer service so that if a live chat comes in, it can make their smartphone beep? And a little window will pop up and it says, so-and-so is entering the chat, and you can support them from wherever you are. And this is one of the discoveries I think we made as a result of the bug, is that you can have customer support and they can do it from their homes and they don't have to be sitting in their home office to do it. Going back to your point, you rate based on output, based not on hours. As long as that phone call, as long as that email, as long as that live chat gets responded to in timely fashion and they deliver good service, Does it matter from where? And I hope we're discovering and we're taking to heart the fact that in some cases it doesn't.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, you're right. I mean, the COVID definitely, I think it helped clean out some corporate head trash, you know, in terms of I mean, you know, my wife, same thing. I mean, large healthcare company she works for, and, you know, they ain't returning. Like, to, you know, they're getting rid of all that massive real estate that, you know, houses all these folks. And I think, you know, they basically realized, like, hey, you know what, we, you know, we're actually hitting our targets and we're still making things happen. And, you know, maybe we don't need all this, you know, normal corporate bureaucracy that we have. So I think that's, if there's any, like, any good things that have come out of it, I think that's definitely it for sure. And so,
I think of, for example, Dan Price. He's the founder of Gravity Payments. He's that guy who he's that guy who reduced his own salary to $75,000 and then raised, I think it was actually most of his employees. I think there were some that just didn't make sense, but I think most of them raised their salaries to $75,000. And they call him a bleeding heart, a liberal, a leftist, a socialist. I call him a capitalist. And here's why. His retention rates, employee retention rates, are something that every company not only aspires to and struggles to reach, but in many cases can't even have wet dreams about. That's how good it is. When the bug hit and there was a lot less money to be made in credit card processing for a while, his employees voluntarily took 50% pay cuts. They came to him asking him to cut their pay.
And then they
stayed with the company. And after things came back and the revenues came back, and the moment that the financials of the company enabled him to, he not only took their salaries back to where they were, he gave them back pay for their cuts.
Yeah, I mean, this is
That's not socialism. That's capitalism.
No, not at all. I mean, it's just, you know, another innovation, right? So. Yeah. I mean, no, 100%. I mean, he's created a game worth playing. It's one of the things we talk about with our clients all the time, is creating that ownership mentality from your employees and creating that game worth playing for them and getting them involved in the game. So, you know, you hear the term a lot, entrepreneurs. And so this is all part of what I mentioned earlier. It's winning the people game. And we see it all the time in our industry, where especially, you know, everything is focused again on marketing and sales. Yes, marketing is important, no doubt about it. But if you don't win the people game, especially if you, again, like we said, there's different types of business models, but let's, you know, that's what we're talking about right now. Then I see it all the time. It's very short-sighted. They're investing all this money in the marketing and sales side of things, but they're not focused on retaining and growing and develop their employees. And, you know, you have turnover, again, going back to my original story, then you have turnover and the cost of that is enormous. And then not just the cost of replacing the individual, but the fact that you, from a leadership standpoint, now are pulled back into the trenches yourself, right? So often having to replace some of those hours, if that's the case. And if not, you know, replacing it, you're still involved in the hiring and recruiting and the replacement process. And so you're not focused on growth. You're not focused on vision and strategy. And so, it's that was smart. If that's what worked for that business, right? I mean, it's an innovation to make that business thrive so that he can win the people game, mm-hmm. have an engaged and aligned culture like that. Amen. Great job.
Yeah. And you know, if you're making good money when you're at work, you're not worrying about your bills.
Oh, 100%.
That's actually, and I think he said this, one of the foundations behind it is he didn't want people working for him worrying about how they were going to make their rent payments. He wanted them focused on growing his business. And the easiest way to do that was just to take away the pain of worrying about the rent.
Yeah, I mean, I just had this conversation with some clients, and I think Zig Ziglar maybe said it originally, but help them get what they want so you get what you want, right?
Pretty
simple. Thought process there. I mean,
yeah,
I luckily always kind of had that even from, you know, a young standpoint, just really pouring into my people to help them grow. Because I remember why I left. I say this all the time too. When I left, you know, I worked 3 years in a gym to start my own studio. And I always tell people all the time, if they would have gave me opportunity, or they would have let me just keep climbing and growing and challenging me, I might have never started my own business.
Okay. Right? You're going where I was headed here. For 2 years, I was building my venture while still working for the company that I had worked for while I was in MBA school, and I got diagonally promoted. So for about a year or so, I was doing both, basically. I was working at the job and I had my side hustle, and I was going back and forth. Which way am I going to go with this? Ultimately, I could have been persuaded one way or the other. And one day I was. Something happened one day and I realized really what a sad company that was, and particularly what an obtuse moron my boss's boss was. And I'm thinking, if this is what's left for me here, I don't want it. Now, it still took me, because I didn't know then what I know now, 9 months to get the business to the point where I could live off it and make a go at it. Boy, this is why I do what I do, because I want to help people cut that down. From that moment on, I realized that I was going the entrepreneurial route. I just had to get there. So as far as this company, I'm going to show up from 8 to 4:30. I'm going to do everything that's on my job description. But, and check this out, I printed out my job description and kept it in my drawer. And anytime something came up that I had a question about, I whipped out that job description. I checked to see if it was on it. And I checked that job description to make sure I was doing all those things and doing them, doing a good job, you know, maximum efforts, and as far as what was needed to get it done, and doing quality work. But beyond that,
so your leader screwed up because they had somebody that got more out of.
Exactly. Yeah. So here's the thing: we talk about the costs of retention and turnover. Well, even before that employee leaves, you probably lost about a year's worth of the salary you were paying them for that last year they were watching the clock. Then you have the vacancy. Then you have the problems that come from getting other people to cover the work. Then you have the whole hiring process. Then you hope you hire the right person, because you might go through two or three before you properly refill the position. Then you have the up ramping for the new person to get them to the point where they can be a net value contributor.
100%.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. You know, if I can just double what I pay customer service and avoid all that, I'm coming out way ahead.
Yeah, no, the process. So we've got, for our clients, that Empirepreneur Ladder that I mentioned, which is the personal growth side of that. But the other, the main process we've taken their business through is what we call our stairway to freedom. And that's capital, people, systems, growth, transformational growth, then scaling. And what we often find, again, is people always talk marketing and everything. Yes, first you got to handle capital, no doubt about it, right? But what we typically find is people always that are pushing, we need more marketing. It wasn't that. It's the people and the systems phase, right? So that transformational growth, once they got that in place, they explode. Then when we get into transformational growth, because now we can add more fuel to the fire. Now we can add more marketing, but we also work on, now you got to develop your leaders. And then you have the freedom to pick your path in terms of scaling. So do you want a franchise license, again, depending on your business model, et cetera. But point being is yes, you got to handle capital early. Of course, every business, 80% of businesses failed due to the lack of the capital. So you got to get that piece. That's why it's our first step to work with clients. But they often are just still focused on that. And that's why they're stuck. Most people never get to those places that all the people that they, admire get to, is because of what we're talking about right now. It's the people step is the next step. Again, depending on model, depending on what your goals are. Matter of fact, even for me right now, I put constraints around aspects of things. So
yeah,
what can I automate first? Right. What can I, right. And so, because I've done the multiple locations, lots of people thing. And so, I've decided at this point, we're still going to be systems and I'm still going to have people, but before we just start adding more and more, what can you, you know, what can you use technology for instance? What can you, especially with automations and things today?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So we're at the top of the hour here, and I trust our listeners may have found something that moves them a little bit forward. I think there were a few mind shifts there. There were a few frame shifts, and there's something within that buffet of information that you and I put together that is going to benefit somebody. I know I learned a few things. So what I'd like to do now is invite all of our listeners, visit Pete's website. It's www.empirepreneur.com. That's empirepreneur.com. And I want you to check that out. Whether or not you're in the fitness industry, whether or not you're a personal trainer, whether or not you're looking for a franchise opportunity, there's so much there that will get you to the point where you can have a business that can work without you. So www.empirepreneur. And with that, Pete Peronio, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor and, believe me, an education.
I appreciate it.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.